This is Bill Cimino, and I am interviewing James Duda on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. This interview is taking place August 23rd, 2023, at the Amelia Island Museum of History as part of the Library of Congress Veterans History Project. Also present in the room are Yvette Ray from the Cross the Line Foundation, Jared Hill from the Museum of History, and assisting me with the interview is Tina Taker from Cross the Line Foundation, who will be operating the recording equipment. Jim, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and where you're from and what drew you to the military in 1968.
I grew up in a little town in central New York, Fulton, New York. Went to high school there. Ended up going to college at Hartwick College, which is in Oneonta, New York, again, central New York. Then in 1968, Vietnam was really cranking along. And I really had no idea what I wanted to do. College was fun for the sports part of it, but studying and all that, I wasn't really a scholar. And just sitting around one afternoon, and one of my fraternity brothers said that he was going to join the Marine Corps. I said, geez, you know, that sounds like a good idea. And lo and behold, I did. I ended up going to officer candidate school right after that.
Yeah, so after you graduated college, you went to OCS and then right to your unit, your first unit in the Marines?
Or yeah, exactly. Got out of OCS, then went to another 20-some weeks of basic training where you learned all the details and how to conduct a war. But sort of like our graduate school, I guess. Spent a couple months in Quantico, then to Vietnam, and then back to Quantico after Vietnam. That was my entire Marine Corps career. Quantico, Vietnam, Quantico.
Did they give you a choice of units or?
You could choose your MOS, military occupational specialty. And my good buddy who went in with me, I told him I went infantry. He goes, oh, you didn't need to do that. He goes, I'm going supply. I'm there, oh, okay. Well, I wish I had thought about that myself. But at that point, even then, 90% of the officers who graduated from OCS ended up in infantry, basically because high casualty rate.
Did you report to your unit directly in Quantico, or did you meet your unit in Vietnam, or did you?
Took a flight from Travis Air Force Base into Da Nang, spent the night in Da Nang, and I saw all these lights going off and hearing noises, and I'm thinking, wow, this is nice. Second night, I went to Division Rear and saw more lights and rockets, and went to my unit the next day. That night, I was on a patrol, or an ambush, actually an ambush, and then saw even more lights.
Yeah. What was the biggest adjustment that you had when you were in Vietnam? What do you feel was your biggest adjustment from stateside duty?
Once I got past that first night, and I'll tell you, this is interesting. I was at a bar in San Francisco. 7 days later, I was on an ambush in Vietnam. So trying to bridge those 7 days from partying to an ambush was the adjustment. And then once I got past the first night, then going the next day out on day patrols, then getting into the rhythm, what we did, patrols during the day, ambushes at night.
What was the longest patrol how long did generally did the patrols last?
My Vietnam time was based in two parts. The first part of it, I was a platoon commander, a basic infantry platoon commander, where I had 75 Marines under me. And most of our activity was just strictly day and night. At the end of my 6 months, the Marine Corps basically, again, because of the high casualty rate, if you were still alive as a platoon commander, you could move back to the rear and do things in the rear. I did that for about 2 weeks and went stark raving mad, and then transferred over to a reconnaissance unit where I could get back out in the bush and work with Marines. When I was with recon, I had patrols that went out as long as 7 days, and I had some as short as about an hour.
So being the new lieutenant, give me some examples of how some of the more veteran soldiers, how are you treated by some of the veterans that might have been there a little bit longer than you, or been in the Army a little bit longer,
yeah,
or Marines a little bit longer than you?
it was terrifying meeting your platoon for the first day, I'll tell you that. But I had something that maybe was to my favor. The units I moved in with was 26 Marines. They had just come off a major operation. They'd been out about 6 weeks out on a major search and destroy mission. When they came back to the rear, when I picked up them, a normal platoon is 45, I had 22. So, you know, because of casualties. And so they basically were anxious to see me. And again, I just felt comfortable. You know, I had good, solid, hardcore Marines who were trained, who knew what they were doing. And I was very fortunate in that I walked into a good group of young Marines.
If you don't mind me asking, how many of the Marines did you lose out of your patrol or your platoon?
Unfortunately, Billy's in double figures. That's all I really want to get into. Those were tough. That was tough. You know, you wondered, did I do the right things or shouldn't I have done anything? You know, you're always thinking, what could I have done better? What shouldn't I have done? And it's tough to look at the rest of the Marines who are still there. And again, maybe are they questioning what I'm doing? Am I doing the right thing? Or are they all in favor of it? But I guess when the time came to saddle up, they just grabbed their gear and off we went. So,
how long was the actual tour? How long was the whole tour, the whole time in Vietnam?
My tour was probably 13 months, of which from day 3 to 2 days prior to leaving, virtually every day and every night was in a combat situation. Not necessarily in combat, but in situations where combat could occur. My whole tour was like that.
Were there any good experiences? Was there any? How did you feel about the war in general when you were over there?
Boy,
did that change your outlook when you were out there? Did you have any change in just how you felt about why you were there?
I guess I was pro war, pro Vietnam War. My dad fought in World War II, so you know all my uncles did. So I guess going into the military wasn't that difficult for me to accept. And of course, if you join the Marine Corps, then you know you're pretty much going to be supporting the war. And you said something else about any good experiences. Sending Marines home was a good experience. Anytime I could just send somebody home.
Tell me a little bit about the Bronze Star with Valor, if you don't mind, if you'd like to talk about that a little bit.
We came under we were out on a daytime patrol. There were probably 14 or 15 of us Marines, and it was in a very contested area in the Northern I Corps area, which is the northernmost part of Vietnam in Marine Corps terminology. And we're just off on a daytime patrol, and we just started coming underneath some pretty heavy fire. And basically, we just pulled back into a circle, and I just started calling in mortar rounds and artillery, and we fought our way out of it, and that was it.
Aside from the Marines, would you have chosen a different branch, or you good with the Marines?
You know the old saying, once a Marine? I guess I just, when I was in college, I had a chance to play baseball. And that's what I really wanted to do after college, if I could, now that I think about it. I really wanted to play baseball. But I was going to get draft notice the same day I graduated from college. Draft board already told me that. And so I said, you know, if I'm going to end up going to Vietnam, because it seemed like everybody was going to Vietnam at that time, figured I might as well go with what I consider the best group who really wanted to be there as opposed to being drafted to go in there. So that's why I joined the Marine Corps.
Did you ever think about staying in after you returned from Vietnam?
Yeah, you know, that's a good one. I did. I wanted to stay in. The way the Marine Corps operates, there are, like, say, 200,000 Marines at any one time. When there is a war, they build up to meet the requirements that they have to fight. Well, Vietnam is winding down. So they started regressing. I had received a billet to go to a language school in Monterey to speak Farsi. Being a political science major, I looking at the geopolitical status of the role at that time. And I said, geez, you know, I'd like to be able to speak the language of the country that I could possibly end up being in. Like in Vietnam, I didn't speak Vietnamese, and that was quite a disadvantage. So I decided I was going to go get Farsi, and I got the billet. I'm all ready to go, and I'm a couple weeks later, I was going to pick up captain's bars. I was all fat, dumb, and happy. And I get a call from headquarters, Marine Corps, Lieutenant Duda, we got some bad news for you. You've been bumped. I go, what do you mean bumped? I said, a captain has taken your language billet, which the Marine Corps allowed in those days. And I said, well, I'm picking up captain's bars. Well, he'll be senior to you. He's going to get the billet. What would you like to do? I said, well, then I kind of got a little nasty, and they got a little nasty. And so I finally said, that's it, I quit, I'm out of here. And I would have stayed in. I thought, a little bit hot-tempered, I guess I was at the time, and wasn't thinking clearly. And at that point, the Marine Corps really didn't care because they're trying to purge people to get back to post-war, pre-war status.
And what year was that?
That was 71.
What was adjustment like after you got out then? What was your adjustment when you came back from Vietnam? How was that?
Getting off the plane, let's just tell you that one. Getting off the plane, I'm sitting next to an Army major, and he says, is this your first tour? I said, yes, sir. He goes, okay, we're going to be going through the San Francisco airport. I'll escort you to your gate. Just shut up and follow me. Well, man, what an adjustment that was. There were some nasty people back in those days. And, you know, that shocked the hell out of me, to be honest with you. I was expecting something like that because you read about it. But until you experience it, that was quite a shock. But, you know, got on the plane, go home, and there's all my friends and relatives greeting me home. And I was a little bit hungover at that point because once I got on the plane to come back to the Syracuse area, a flight attendant looked at me and said, are you just coming home from Vietnam? I said, yes. And I was waiting for something nasty to be said. She goes, you come with me. I said, okay. Takes me to the back of the airplane, and she goes, that is the alcohol cart, whatever term they use for it. She goes, help yourself. I said, oh, okay, great. And I helped myself, and the next morning I wasn't feeling too good. But the adjustment was difficult. I remember very clearly going into a bar in my little hometown, and people just turn around and looking at me. I'm going, it's me, remember? And then I look over in a corner, and there's two guys I played high school baseball with. They had just come home from Vietnam. One guy was an Army medic. Another one was a Navy corpsman. And so the three of us played baseball together, knew each other for years, and we just sat there for like 2 weeks, not even talking to each other hardly, and just drinking beer and trying to get acclimatized. And after that, just finally getting off leave and going back on active duty, going back, you know, into the Corps, I guess that probably helped me more than anything else. But once I did get out of the Marine Corps, though, and became a civilian, and people found out about it, they kind of shied away from you. I mean, it was nothing belligerent, I don't think, but it was just, they just sort of looked down on you.
So what type of life lessons did you learn from your service, would you say?
Well, one thing I learned is I don't have any patience, which my wife will attest to. But as you well know, I guess just have the courage to stand up for what you believe in. If you think it's the right track, then stay on it and do it. Treating people with respect, I think, you know, treat them the way you want to be treated. And help those who need help.
Do you still have contact with any of the people you served with?
Ironically, I do. Two guys who the three of us were in the same squad at boot camp. And 55 years later, we're still talking to each other. And I have to return a phone call to another guy who I was in Vietnam with in the same recon unit. And I haven't seen him since the day we left Vietnam. So I'm anxious to get a hold of him. And of course, I can't use his nickname anymore because it would be apolitical. But The picture of Mount Suribachi, where the six Marines and the corpsman are raising a flag up on Suribachi, one of those Marines was a guy named Hayes. Geez, I forget his name. Ira Hayes. He's a Pima Indian from the Pima Indian Reservation and outside of Phoenix. My best friend, who I'm trying to get a hold of, was a Pima Indian in the same tribe of Ira Hayes. So I kind of thought that was kind of cool. So we're playing telephone tag. That'd be good to get back with him.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. And in the small town in New York, and you had mentioned it, there was two other guys. So how many from your small town in New York?
The town itself had
either drafted or served.
Oh, the town itself was 12,000, but there's a memorial there for people who died in service, and there was quite a few. There were probably 15, 20 up on that wall.
It's a lot. It's too many.
The draft board was after people in our area for some reason. That's probably in all areas, but I'm just saying they drafted heavily from our area.
So what are you doing in civilian life now? Now that you're retired, apparently, enjoying life.
Once I got out of the Marine Corps, I eventually ended up getting in the telecommunications world with in marketing with a major telecom manufacturer. Did my 20 years there, retired. And then about 2002, said to myself, I've always wanted, I was living in Dallas. I said, and I had to come to Jacksonville on business. And I said, I have always wanted and heard about Amelia Island. So I drove up here and came up along Fletcher and drove into downtown. I said, geez, called my wife up. I said, I think I found the place we're going to move to. 6 months later, here we were. And did I answer your question, or did I babble on again?
What year was this? What year?
That was 2002, and we stayed here for about 10 years when my son and his wife said, who said, well, we're never going to have children, had a child. So, of course, my wife says, oh, we got to move back to Dallas. I told her, I said, well, have a good time there. I'll see you. But I ended up moving back with her, and we spent 5 years there, and then finally, she said, I miss Fernandina. And we moved back here, and we've been here, since 17, I guess. Great place to be.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Yeah.
I definitely have to agree. All right, Jim. Well, thank you for speaking with me today. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we turn off the recording?
Again, just get back to Fernandina for the heck of it. The Veterans Day part of the year with the parades and all the veterans out there, it does make me feel good. It makes me feel very good to go downtown. And since 1971, I have refused to work on November 10th and November 11th. November 10th being Marine Corps birthday, and the 11th, of course, Veterans Day. And I just go around and talk to veterans and maybe have an adult beverage.
Yeah, they do a great job in Fernandina of honoring the veterans, our veterans, and that's for sure.
And I thank you for your service.
Anytime. The photo that you shared, do you want to, real quick, before we close, want to go through, tell us who the people are in the picture and what you have there?
I remember one for sure, and that's a guy standing next to me. He's a Navy corpsman. And after I ran my first half dozen patrols, we had a lot of Marines getting hurt in bad areas. And he said, Lieutenant Duda, he goes, you are always in the crap. He goes, I'm going to go with you on all your subsequent patrols. And he did. And there's no need for a corpsman to go out on reconnaissance patrols. They just didn't need to be there. But he volunteered in the way he went. And all the other Marines, I just don't remember their names. I just don't. But I will show you what one of my fellow reconnaissance Marines uncovered one day. He was out on a patrol. He was waiting for a helicopter to come pick him up. When they heard noise, they were attacked, and they opened up. We spent a lot of time way out in the mountains and jungles of Vietnam, and if you ever heard a tiger roar at night, it will absolutely get your heart racing.
I could imagine.
And this tiger actually attacked this recon group who was waiting for the helicopter to come in, and they said, and they called, and I was right there, and I heard them call in saying, we're bringing a prisoner in. So they brought the prisoner in, and this picture ended up in Stars and Stripes magazine, and the guy who took it had to have been standing right next to me, because I took a picture at the same time, and it's that same picture.
Then the article reads, unfriendly tiger comes up second best in the test with Marine.
Yeah.
So it's a picture of a tiger being captured out of the jungles in Vietnam.
And again, we were tracked by tigers, and North Vietnamese were even using dogs to track us down when we were out there. And we got to the point where we're actually carrying bags of carbon disulfide crystals with us, which is basically tear gas. We would just throw that around at night when we were harboring up the night, or sometimes even during the day when we thought we were being followed. But.
And what is this one here? It looks like parachuting.
When I was back in Quantico, I served under this captain right here. His name's Wesley Fox, who was a Medal of Honor recipient. And he talked me into joining the local skydivers club, but I'm in here somewhere.
Tell us about the local skydivers club. We didn't hit on that.
No, that was a lot of fun. I clearly remember my first jump out of a helicopter. We were in a little Huey, and you can't stand up in a Huey. You have to get in a crouch, and you have to jump sideways, and you have to jump sideways far enough to get past the skid so you can exit the helicopter safely. Well, when I exited, I slipped, and my helmet hits the skid, and I'm falling upside down. I'm going, man, I don't think it's supposed to be this way. And but I probably made 80-some jumps with them, and even did some of the early Halo-Lalo jumps for the Marine Corps. That's the high altitude, low opening types of things. Experimented with that.
Well, I'm glad you showed me that picture. We wouldn't have touched on that. So that's good. That's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Right? And I kept thinking, you know, I'm being paid to do this. Jump out of helicopters, stay in shape. I mean, but that was a glorious life at that time.
Did you have any jumps in Vietnam, or were they all?
No, it was all stateside here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's about all the exciting stuff. I mean, you're welcome to look through this.
Well, we'll definitely take that and add that to the collection for the library, for sure, or some of it. Is there anything else you want to share before we close? Because, again, thank you for sharing your story with us.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me.